I'm Matthew Smith, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Fallon Clark and her partner live in Colchester and keep a gun in their home.
We have a firearm in the home that is only for home defense. We're both well-equipped with how to use it. Neither of us are hunters, so we don't own rifles or anything like that.
Clark says she's not opposed to looking at restrictions on gun ownership or increased regulation, but she worries that the reaction to the shooting in Parkland, Florida, and the near miss in Fairhaven, Vermont, are pushing lawmakers to make decisions on gun restrictions that are not fully researched or thought out.
The gun issue, the violence, may be the ultimate consequence of what's going on, but there are underlying issues socially, emotionally, mentally, behaviorally that are causing people to turn to violence. And so putting a stop to guns or adding a bunch of regulations on guns doesn't change behaviors, perceptions, people's emotional states, the way that society functions. And I don't think it's necessarily appropriate to jump right to legislative gun action when we haven't done what we need to do to figure out what the root of that problem actually is.
Clark says she would fully support legislation that would allow much deeper research into guns, but also into mental health, violence, and cultural issues. One of the issues when we talk about guns and gun control and what to do about violence committed by people with guns is that the conversation is often dominated by extreme sides, and it seems as though they talk past each other rather than to one another. Clark says she sees this as well.
Gun ownership, the Second Amendment in general, is a very polarizing subject. I mean, our two major political parties in the country run on differences in how they view the Second Amendment. When it's seen in such a public light like that, where you either have to be for guns or against them, it doesn't leave a lot of room for helpful civil conversation that can get to some of these areas that we sort of talked about. That is a serious default in not the way that our politics works, but on the way that our society handles political conversation. And it's not just guns. There's a lot of other political platforms and situations that are very polarizing. This is just one of them. And this is one that happens to incite fear because it's also related to potentially dangerous weaponry and has really hurtful social implications when something goes wrong with guns.
So do you find that in your own social circles you are able to have conversations that feel less charged, even with people who don't own guns or who own guns for different reasons or who feel differently about what kinds of laws should be put in place?
Yes and no. So my partner and I are not hunters by any means, but we can have conversations with hunters without any sort of issue, you know, no emotional raising, nothing like that. We've also had conversations with people in our lives who are adamantly against guns and were sort of interested in full repeal of the Second Amendment and wanted to see a real constitutional change. And in that situation, when somebody has a mindset that steadfast where they think they understand the solution, many people in that light are not really agreeable to open compromise and conversation. And those are the people that you want to reach more. Those are the ones that you want to talk to and really get to the root of why they feel that way. They're almost the hardest ones to talk to because their opinions are so steadfast, because they're so black and white in their own minds that it becomes a conversation of, well, you know, I don't know why you wouldn't agree with me. You know, it would take away this problem if we just did this without a lot of forethought or insight into what someone else may be thinking about.
That was Fallon Clark of Colchester. Today on the show, we want to have a conversation that goes beyond the shouting, and we especially wanted to offer a chance for gun owners who find themselves in the middle of a conversation that often swirls around them but doesn't always include them. Because there are no gun registries, it's fairly impossible to know exactly how many people in Vermont own guns. but half of the 620 respondents to a poll from the Castleton Polling Institute in 2013 said that there were guns in their households. So you could extrapolate, although not know, that maybe half of all Vermont households own guns. Polling conducted by Castleton for VPR in 2016 showed broad support for gun control measures from both gun owners and non-gun owners. 89% of respondents, including 82% of gun owners, said they support universal background checks. 83% of respondents, including 70% of gun owners in that poll, said they support a waiting period between buying a gun and taking it home. So there's a lot of consensus, and yet the conversation is often dominated by these viewpoints that don't seem to come together in any place. So let's have a conversation that has a little bit more nuance and is informed by gun ownership. Jeff Chamberlain is a hunter from Killington who says he's used guns since he was 12. Michael Abasian is a retired Montpelier physician who says he's owned and used guns his whole life. And Seth Chase is a network engineer living in Colchester who's also used guns his whole life, including before, during, and after his years in the U.S. Army and the Vermont Army National Guard. They are all with me in the studio today, and I want to thank the three of you for being on the program and having this conversation. Thanks very much.
Thank you,
Jane. Pleasure to be here.
And let's go down the line here with you gentlemen and first get to know a little bit about your relationship to guns, because I think that's an important part of this conversation, how you feel about guns, how you use them, and how you view your own gun ownership in light of the conversations that are happening. Michael, you're down at the end. Let's start with you.
Sure. Probably like most Vermonters, I started with my family hunting, and at one point the whole family, my mother and I, my brothers, were all shooting trap. Still do a lot of duck hunting. I've been on marksmanship teams. So it's pretty much the whole my whole life with guns. At one point, I was a lifetime NRA member, and that has now been discontinued.
Because?
Their politics is just so your that preliminary interview you had, I think one of the problems is the politics and the divisive rhetoric that is out there.
Is your disavowal of the NRA or removing your membership a recent thing, or has that been?
I just looked it up. I wasn't sure. I thought it was back way back, but it was in 2012, right after Newtown.
So that's Michael Abasian. Let's talk to Jeff Chamberlain. What's your relationship to guns? How do you come to this conversation?
Hi, Jane. I started out hunting with my family, my father and my brother and my uncles, and I took hunter safety in Vermont at a young age, around age 12. And I've been a hunter ever since, not necessarily a diehard hunter, but I hunt white-tailed deer in November, and I enjoy target shooting a half dozen or so times a year. And my father always imparted on me the importance of being a responsible handler of guns and a hunter, and to never be reckless and to consider that some other people may be uncomfortable with what you're doing. So always carry yourself with the utmost respect and courtesy, and to show people that there are responsible people out there handling firearms.
If hunter safety was one of the first introductions you had to guns and gun ownership, one of the tenets of the hunter safety courses in Vermont is to really impart on, especially young people, that idea of being respectful of the power you hold with a gun. So was that part of your sort of introduction to guns?
Absolutely. That was one of the most critical parts. My father really always imparted that on me very strongly, that you would never point a gun at anything that you didn't want to be destroyed or dead, and that to be, that is the most dangerous thing that you could ever have in your hands, and that you need to treat it that way at all times.
Seth, what about for you?
I grew up around guns. My first exposure was with my family. I ended up doing hunter safety later on. I never really got into the whole hunting thing. I don't like killing things. But I've been doing target shooting. I enjoy sport shooting, clay pigeons, targets, the three-gun competition, that sort of thing. My time in the Army, I specifically chose engineers because I thought that would be a little bit more suited to my talent. And, you know, expert marksmanship, that sort of thing seems to resonate better with me than, going out. As much as I love the woods, I keep the two things separate.
So has your position on guns, your view on guns and gun restrictions changed in the last few weeks? This conversation is really dominating the national conversation, but also I think a lot of people are just thinking about it personally because there has been this conversation about a potentially thwarted school shooting in Vermont. There's all this conversation happening among politicians and who's changing their minds and what's happening. And so it's a little bit difficult to avoid thinking about this. Has your own position changed at all?
I come at it analytically. So the statistics on it's very frightening for a lot of people and it's very emotionally charged. But, you know, risk versus hazard, it's not something that is it doesn't raise an alarm for me that requires immediate action just by the virtue of the emotion attached to it.
We live in a state with almost no gun restrictions. Most of the gun restrictions in Vermont are federal in nature. Do you think that's appropriate or do you think there should be changes?
I think it kind of works for Vermont. Vermont's been pretty libertarian in a lot of ways. We take care of our neighbors but let people do their own thing. And it kind of shows in our crime rates. It's pretty safe here.
Jeff, what do you think?
I agree with pretty much all of that. I do feel that we are in one of the safest states in the country and that our gun laws have been working for us. As a gun owner myself, in light of all these tragedies that have happened, I have found myself willing to soften my views on a few sensible proposed changes. And I would support some of those. But I feel that it's important to keep in mind that we do live in a very safe state and that most of the gun-related deaths in our state are actually from suicides. So keeping that in mind, I'm in favor of tweaks to the regulations.
Like what? What specifically are you in favor of?
I believe that the bump stock ban is 100% reasonable. And as a firearm owner myself who owns one of the rifles that is brought up a lot in this current discussion, I do agree that that kind of a modification or those types of devices have no practical use for a shooter. They don't contribute to accuracy or technique or any such thing. They're only for maximum fire rate, and that really is unnecessary. They fire fast enough on their own.
The gun, particular gun that comes up most in the conversation is an AR-15. Is that what you're saying you have?
Yes, I have a derivative of that.
What about for you, Michael? What do you think is appropriate? And when you look at, you know, everything we're talking about with state restrictions and the safety of the state, but also looking at ways to prevent problems and include suicide and domestic violence that are often the areas where there is gun violence in this state.
Well, my views really haven't changed much over the last 10 years, and I kind of disagree that this is all of a sudden. This has been going on for a decade. So my positions really haven't changed. I agree with Seth that we do need more data. And then I see the government say we're not going to do any more gun violence research. I mean, that these things just don't make sense. And to me, that's things have to make sense to have a background check, but you can sell guns at, you know, gun shows.
When you say that, so a federally licensed firearm dealer always has to do a background check. But yeah. Somebody who you, if you went to a gun show and you wanted to sell your gun, you could sell that.
That makes no sense to me. That just does not make any sense to me. And we've had a decade to clean up these loopholes and deficiencies, and we haven't done it. And
so what would you like to see in Vermont? And nationally, but what would you like to see? I mean, it sounds like you're in favor of more universal, if not totally universal, background checks.
Universal background checks.
Including families. So if you hand down to a child or a grandchild, that should trigger a background check.
That's a good point. It gets a little tricky how you did. Handing down is one thing. I can go either way on the assault rifles. But it is called an assault rifle for a reason. And so I was asking Jeff earlier, why do people want these weapons? And I haven't heard a good reason why people want them. And if it could save a couple of lives at a mass shooting, I'd be in favor of banning them. But if there are people like Jeff who uses them responsibly, that's a good reason not to ban them. So I can listen to both sides of the argument. in that regard.
We have a lot of listeners who have been sharing their thoughts with us throughout the morning and now on the line as well. And you can share yours, listeners. You can call 800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. And on that question of why would somebody have it, say, for example, an AR-15, Robin says, I support responsible gun ownership, but doesn't understand the AR-15 and writes, I'd like to hear someone explain why civilians want to own AR-15s and similar weapons. They're not appropriate for hunting, target shooting, or self-defense, so why do people want to use them? Bill in Duxbury is a hunter and a hunter safety education instructor, and he wanted to explain some issues around the use of the AR-15 and similar rifles by hunters and wrote to say, I have to address the modern sporting rifles and their advantages and disadvantages for young and new hunters. The truth is, hunters have been using semi-automatic firearms for decades. There are lots of good reasons for using an AR-15 or similarly styled rifle. They can be very accurate and very reliable. The semi-automatic action absorbs some of the recoil, allowing hunters to get back on target quickly if a follow-up shot is needed. What I hear in the media is that hunters shouldn't be spraying the woods with bullets or blasting a poor animal to pieces. The truth is, hunters are restricted to rifles that hold a maximum of 5 rounds for big game hunting. Hunters have to be very careful about shot selection to ensure a quick, clean kill. This is most commonly accomplished by shooting vital organs, heart and or lungs. Spraying bullets is not an effective way to connect with a target in the woods. Jeff, you own an AR-15. Why?
I do. Well, initially it was somewhat of the novelty of owning it, and largely just for target shooting and target practice was my reason. The calibers that AR-15s are chambered in are unsuitable for large game hunting, meaning you wouldn't want to use an AR-15 for a white-tailed deer or anything like that. Small game, perhaps, with the 5-round capacity.
And that is a restriction in Vermont for hunting.
Yes.
You are not allowed to take into the woods with you a gun that has a 30-round clip in it.
Right? Any firearm. That those restrictions do apply to any firearm.
For hunting.
For hunting.
So would you be opposed to what's often called an assault weapons ban or a ban that included AR-15s?
I would be opposed to that. I don't feel that the gun itself is responsible for how it's misused. I understand that it may potentially be a greater threat and cause potentially more damage, but it's only as dangerous as the hands that it's in. And I do support certain measures to maybe make it a little bit tougher to acquire these firearms. But it's not like that they're handing them out in the stores. They are expensive, and ammunition for them is also fairly expensive. They're not a cheap purchase that a gun owner would just, I'll just indiscriminately buy one of these rifles. They're not cheap.
So, but what if the law came in and said, we're going to ban all semi-automatic weapons? Because when you talk about an assault weapons ban and we start to get into brands and actual models, it gets very complicated. And what one person says is an assault rifle is not necessarily what another person says is an assault rifle or an assault weapon. What about the question that some people have of just ban semi-automatic weapons?
I think that would be a gross overreach. There are many popular rifles and shotguns that are used for hunting that are semi-automatic. I feel like in the state of Vermont, we've addressed a lot of that issue by making sure that hunters only have a 5-round magazine in their rifles. And if I'm not mistaken, waterfowl hunters, they can use semi-automatic shotguns, but they are limited to a 3-round capacity.
Although, in the polling, and again, we don't know how many people in Vermont own guns or exactly what they own them for, but many people in Vermont do not own guns for hunting. And I think we often think of ourselves as a hunting state, but when you start to look at why people are owning guns, sometimes it's for hunting, but often it's for home defense or target shooting or other reasons. And that 5-round limit does not carry over to guns that are not used for hunting.
That's right. That's right. The 5-round limit pretty much just limits what is out in the woods for hunters. Anything else that's larger than that would be limited to private property or approved ranges.
Let's go to Dan, who's calling in from Springfield. Hi, Dan. Go right ahead.
Yeah, one of my big concerns in the state of Vermont is you can still purchase a firearm, like, say, at a yard sale or any private party sale with no background check involved, no paperwork involved. So basically the gun's untraceable, could be sold to anybody from literally any state that would happen to come here with, you know, basically no guidelines, no restrictions at all. I kind of feel that maybe it's time to change that law, so we need to go through a licensed dealer and actually do a background check, even if you want to sell a gun privately.
Dan, I appreciate your perspective and your thinking on that. We're talking about guns today, gun culture, gun restrictions, gun rights, and the conversation about guns and how quickly it devolves into something unhelpful often. We're talking with some people who think about this issue as gun owners. Fallon Clark of Colchester, who owns a gun for home defense, says she's worried about some of the restrictions being debated in Montpelier.
I typically am of the mindset that law-abiding citizens are not, you know, we're not necessarily going to be affected by restrictions, except that it may make it harder for someone in my position to go get a firearm. You know, if we're talking about, there was some debate on raising the age to buy a firearm to 21, and that seems like a great idea on the surface, but I wouldn't want to put any restriction on a 20-year-old single parent from buying a firearm to defend their family. So there are always situations that are going to be sort of outside of what's being captured. There are always going to be individual circumstances that are sort of outliers and people affected very negatively by these restrictions.
Again, that's Fallon Clark of Colchester. We're talking today with Jeff Chamberlain, a hunter from Killington, who says he's used guns since he was 12. Michael Abasian, a retired Montpelier physician who's owned and used guns his whole life. And Seth Chase, a network engineer in Colchester who's also used guns his whole life. And let's go to Selah, calling in from Rochester. Hi, Selah. Go right ahead.
Hi. Yeah. Well, you know, there's so many points to this, but I think, first of all, I mean, it's the Second Amendment for a reason. That's how we got our freedom from England. And I do think with all these shootings that there needs to be more mental health and for free for anyone, because there's obviously huge mental health problems that are causing all these people to go out and shoot. And also, I'm a gun owner, and I feel like I've done biathlon and taken the hunter safety course twice to hone my skills. And I feel like, you know, hunting is a really New England and Vermont value that, you know, you can feed your family with. And it's something that people do for enjoyment and getting out in the woods. There's a lot of great things about it. And I think that they shouldn't be banned completely, but also that, you know, we need to be safer. And I think the mental health, would help that a lot. And also, you know, a semi-automatic ban, would be a good thing as well.
Selah, thanks for your perspective. I appreciate hearing it. Let's get a couple more calls in here as we think about, as a state and as a nation, our relationship to guns and what could be effective, what impinges on people's rights, what would stop gun violence. And let's go to Flint, calling in from Versher. Hi, Flint. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate the panel today. My question has to do with the cause of why this is going on. Guns have existed in the 1860s through about 1990s, and so did schools. But there weren't school shootings. I understand the AR-15 is dangerous, and they could amplify the casualties. But we have to look deeper and understand that schools and guns have existed for a long time. Now, why in the last 15 years has this been so out of whack? Well, to me, it's social media. And to me, it's raising our children, unfortunately, with screens and not with love and around the dinner table. And I think we need to get back to these basic values in order to solve the problem.
Let me ask you this, Flint. I want to ask you about this because, you know, if there's sort of an all-in approach, as Governor Scott is calling his perspective now on guns and school violence, should there be restrictions placed on firearms or bans placed on firearms at the same time that somebody is looking into, the government presumably is looking into violence and our culture and the media and social media and parenting. Should, given the consequences of gun violence, should gun restrictions or gun bans be a part of that conversation as those other things are taking place, Flint?
It should definitely be a part of the conversation. I think all of it should be a part of the conversation. That's why I appreciate your show today, is because of these real diverse perspectives. However, as you said, Jane, I think it's a cultural, it stems from a cultural issue. It really does. It doesn't matter if it's a shotgun, you know, or an AR-15, is we need to write the culture.
I appreciate you calling in, Flint. Thanks for sharing your perspective. Michael, of our panel, you're the most in favor of more gun restrictions or increased gun restrictions. What do you think about this idea that it's the culture, not the guns, and how do we address that?
It's like your caller just said, it's multifaceted, and I agree with what they're all saying, the mental health issues. There's got to be some regulations on the guns, strengthening, you know, our schools, multi-pronged. I'm not going to exclude any of them, so I'm in favor of all of them. And in terms of the issue about the defining what an assault rifle is, there are some pretty specific descriptions. You don't need a flash suppressor on a hunting gun. I mean, you don't need devices to keep you from burning your hand because the barrel's getting so hot. I mean, there are things that are assault rifles. And the magazine, the size of the magazine. So if you want to keep your assault rifles, fine, but let's limit then the magazines. So
you think there are approaches, if it's not a ban on specific models, it could be a ban on some of the equipment and some
right.
of the parts and
exactly.
pieces. Seth, what do you think?
I think regardless of what your approach is, it should be steeped in the facts of how the device is act. A flash suppressor doesn't necessarily increase any lethality of a weapon. Every firearm, every rifle has a protector for your hand because the barrel gets warm. Your traditional wooden stocked hunting rifles, it's just made out of wood, not plastic. You know, Jeff, you said you used an AR, and I don't know how much practice you've had, but swapping a magazine is anywhere from a fraction of a second to maybe a couple of seconds if you've got a fish for it.
A 30 rounder?
Yeah.
Regardless.
Yeah,
of
30 or 5.
Then
you can go through.
That you would want to get rid of the 30 round clips. I mean, why do you need a 30 round clip?
For 3 gun competitions, for target shooting, for just, the same reason you'd need a 5-round mag. It's just a lot of the conversation seems to focus on things that people think are superfluous or increase danger, but don't actually change the way the firearm operates. You know,
although I guess that the argument there would be if you are only have access to to 5 rounds, you're not going to kill 17 people with 5 rounds. If you have a CMAG and you have 100 rounds right there, that's a difference. That's a difference of scale. So why not ban them and make them at least harder for people to have access to, even if it makes a difference and impinges on gun competitions or people's skeet shooting or people's, target practice or other things that they enjoy.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that we as a society could do to remove incremental risk. But in the grand scheme of things, the danger and lethality of a particular firearms platform isn't changed by having to swap out 5 mags. You can do it in a 100-round clip or a 30-round clip or, six 5-round ones.
Yeah.
And the rate of fire is slowed by target acquisition more than chambering additional rounds.
We got a note from Alice who says, "My concern about guns is Vermont's suicide rates are directly related to gun ownership or access to a firearm. I'm not an all-or-nothing person on gun control, but the finality of suicide via gun worries me. Any ideas on this?" VPR did a series on gun deaths, and 420 people died from gunshot wounds in Vermont between 2011 and the end of 2016. Among those deaths, 89%, 373, were suicides involved. And guns. And so the gun violence in Vermont largely is people who are killing themselves with guns. And so part of this conversation around guns and gun restrictions certainly involves that question of people who are not necessarily mass violence, but violence to one individual and often self-inflicted violence. Yeah. Do you see, Jeff, anything that you think would work?
That part of the gun deaths is a really hard thing to approach and to try to change. We don't really know exactly what the reasons are for all those suicides. I know that we are a death with dignity state, and it could very well be that that's somebody's alternative method of using that right, I guess. But
well, I mean, yeah, that particular law has a lot of restrictions on, you know, somebody has to be within, I think, 6 months of death and has to get physician approval. But I don't, I mean, certainly people are trying to end their own lives, but the reasoning behind that, is varied.
It's unknown. We had a family friend that was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and they ended up taking their own life. So it's very hard to know what exactly the cause of those are. The only way maybe to combat that is maybe taking a stronger mental health approach. But you can't always control what people are going to do in their private lives. You can't stop every bad thing from happening. It doesn't matter how many laws or regulations that you add.
Some people suggest a waiting period, a longer waiting period between when you go in to say, I would like to buy a firearm, even if your background check clears. And right now, unless you have, you know, unless you're not a citizen or there are other things, often you can walk in and walk out with a firearm. And so should there be, sometimes it's called a cooling off period. Some states say you should have 3 days, 10 days, so that you couldn't go in the mind frame of, I need this gun right now to cause violence either to myself or another person. Seth, do you think that would be a good approach?
I'd love to see some studies on it. I suspect that people who choose that as a means of ending their life are probably already familiar with firearms, but I've got absolutely no factual basis for that. And if it is people who say, hey, this is my first time with a gun, I'm going to go buy one and dispatch myself, then that would be a realistic risk. The same thing with domestic violence. If, you know, people going in and purchasing their first firearm and causing domestic violence is an actual thing that happens, then, yeah, that would absolutely make sense. But if these people already have firearms in their home, you know, a 30-day cooling down period wouldn't impact that.
Worth saying here, as we talk about these issues, often the question of mental illness comes up, and there's a conversation about just ban people with mental illness from owning guns. And we should just point out that statistically, people with diagnosed mental illness are less likely to commit violence with guns or otherwise, and in fact are more likely to be victims of violence than perpetrators. We're getting a lot of comments here on guns and gun conversation. Nathan says he's been a gun owner for 50 years and supports some rules. He says, I'd like to see mandatory instruction and competence testing before taking ownership of a firearm. John in Brattleboro says all guns should be registered. All gun owners should have to pass a gun safety course every few years. We should ban the sale of assault rifles to anyone regardless of age, revoke open carry laws. Any individual owning more than 5 firearms should be open to closer scrutiny. The same goes for anyone purchasing a large quantity of ammunition. Jonathan says Vermont shouldn't change or add any gun laws. The guns aren't the problem, he writes. Vermont is a shining example of how a state with little gun law has little gun violence. And he says he supports having armed staff in schools, writing, I don't understand how a teacher, staff, or a human being would not want to protect their life and the lives of those around them. Brian says his reaction after Parkland, the shooting in Florida, is mixed, and writes, I'm always interested in how we could improve our gun laws. In Parkland's case, it's clear that the FBI and local law enforcement's inability to follow procedure likely enabled this incident. And Brian says in a follow-up tweet, in this case, if laws and protocols aren't followed, how are more laws and protocols going to change the outcome? Jonathan is a gun owner who tweeted that Parkland changed something for him and writes, time to reform assault weapon ownership and address the link to domestic violence. I'm fully open to licensing and registration requirements. This issue is coming home to Vermont. Best to be proactive. Though in response to what gun control should look like, VT4 answers on Twitter, like it does at the present. The mental health climate needs a lot of work. Healthcare is the first priority, and that includes mental health. You really can't separate the two. Let's go to Dwight, calling in from Cornwall. Hi, Dwight. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm sorry to be so emotional, but I've been a hunter and in a hunting family for 60 years. I have several rifles. I got rid of handguns years ago because they scared me. I carried an M16 for a better part of a year with 400 rounds, 20-round magazines that I could pop right in. I truly believe that if you're a hunter, you hunt for the first shot. That's the only shot that really matters, the one shot. I would give up all of my rifles except for my muzzleloader, which takes about 3 minutes to load. If they would stop producing automatic weapons for civilians, they can still produce them for the military and law enforcement. And I've never felt threatened that my guns were going to be taken away if we got rid of automatic weapons. I would like to see all automatic weapons banned.
Dwight, I really appreciate hearing your perspective, and you said sorry to get emotional. This is something that people are emotional about in many different ways, and I think acknowledging that is fine, and that certainly contributes to why this conversation reaches such a fever pitch. And certainly people have to be analytical, and politicians have to be analytical about how and do research. But the fact that this is emotional is part of why it's, I think, a difficult conversation for so many people, because in many cases, especially for gun owners, it involves more than just the object itself, but what it represents. And so this is an emotional conversation for many people, and I appreciate you sharing your emotion with us. Let's go to Chris, who's on the line from Winooski. Hi, Chris.
Hi there. I just want to say, first of all, thanks so much to you guys for just a wonderful and diverse and interesting conversation. And I think it's something that we need a lot more of, ongoing. And I just wonder what your guys' perspective is on this. You know, how did it get to this point as far as the NRA has taken a position of basically being the ipso facto representation of gun owners in this country, when my suspicion, and I believe the numbers would support me, that the vast majority of gun owners are much more moderate and are much less political, as you all have kind of indicated. So I just, you know, what happened there, and what can gun owners do to reclaim that space in the public, the conversation about this?
Chris, I appreciate your perspective, and I'd love to hear from all three of our guests today what you think about that and the NRA and the NRA's position in this conversation and that sort of de facto representation of gun owners. Seth, I see you saying, I'll take that.
I think extremism sells. I think the middle ground doesn't get any traction because it's not new and flashy and catchy. It doesn't inspire people's emotions. And, you know, the middle ground is often confused with apathy. And, you know, the only way to get any, you know, news time or airtime or advertising time is to shock people and, you know, push things further to the edge.
Are you a member of the NRA?
Used to be.
Why did you stop?
Kind of the same thing. They no longer represent, they advertise themselves as the first civil rights agency, and they no longer do that. They started sabotaging other people's civil rights in order to push their own.
Jeff, what do you think?
I haven't ever been a member of the NRA. I kind of look at them as a one-issue organization, and they don't necessarily represent me. I think, as Seth said, extremism somewhat sells. I personally don't support bans, but I do support reasonable restrictions to allow responsible gun owners to continue using these firearms as they have been for decades in our state without really very much incidents of misuse. The NRA is a one-issue party, and it's they don't represent the vast majority of responsible firearm owners.
Do you think non-firearm owners see that the same way, that the NRA doesn't represent the majority of firearm owners? It's not the way the NRA presents it. And in fact, it's often not the way non-gun owners present the NRA.
I feel that it turns into a situation unfortunately, where if you are a gun owner, you get placed on one side of the issue, and then people that are not gun owners or don't have experience with firearms are the other. So even though you might be moderate and in favor of enhancing restrictions or age requirements of certain types of firearms or magazines, you get placed on one side of an issue.
Two choices.
Yeah, even though you're not really against the other side.
Michael? Yeah, go ahead. Seth, Jeff, I interrupted you.
Oh, I was just going to say, everybody wants our kids to be safe and people in our community. No gun owner wants to see things on the news like what have been happening.
Michael?
Yeah, I would make a plea to gun owners not to drink the Kool-Aid from the NRA. I was going over some of their quotes from the CPAC. He was talking about Democrats. This is how political. You should be anxious and you should be frightened. If they seize power, I mean, the Democrats are going to seize power. Our American freedoms could be lost and our country will be changed forever. The first thing to go will be the Second Amendment. This is just, you know, nonsense, fear-mongering.
Is that Wayne LaPierre you're quoting?
That was Wayne LaPierre. And people have got to learn that the Second Amendment it's in our Constitution. You can't just have it whisked away. And they talk about slippery slopes. I mean, the only slippery slope is them. I see more and more guns coming into society because of their rhetoric and wanting to arm everybody, our churches, our malls, our schools. This is the slippery slope that scares me, not losing our rights to have guns.
You know, we broached this conversation saying gun owners often do get put into one category. And so let's talk to gun owners in Vermont, not because we shouldn't be talking to non-gun owners as well, but often the conversation seems to be, you know, somebody representing a Sportsman's Federation or the NRA and somebody representing gun restrictions, pro-gun restrictions voice. And then it's like, these are the only two sides. And so that's not the conversation we wanted to have. But, you know, we said we're going to have this conversation and a Twitter user named Maddie Wren said, in this idea of, you know, should we have this conversation with gun owners, wrote, maybe their opinion doesn't matter. I mean, do you feel like you have a voice in this conversation and what you have to say? I mean, it strikes me that if half of all families in Vermont may be gun owners are going to have to be part of a conversation about anything that happens in this state and any implementation of rules. So do you feel like you're represented, like you have a voice and that this is a conversation that you feel like you can be part of moving forward?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We're all gun owners. We all feel strongly about the Second Amendment, and we all have a voice. And
are you using it? I mean, are you out there in the protests saying something needs to change? I mean, Seth, maybe not you.
I'm not in the protests, but I communicate with my elected officials, and I'm pushing them for common sense, for logic, for science. You know, study it and, you know, don't get caught up in the fear on either side. You know, a lot of people bandy about the term common sense, but then they don't actually study it or learn anything about it. If you think something, then find somebody who thinks the opposite and bounce your ideas off them and learn something, grow.
Jeff?
I feel it is a very important conversation to have, and I look at my role in this as just to present my side and try to be a good listener to the other side and try to just clearly explain my position and why I have it. We all want the same thing. We want a safer community and a safer society. Gun owners are a key part of that. It's our firearms that are out there either being used properly or misused. We take the heat when it goes wrong, and if everything's going right, we really don't get much of the credit directly. But it's very important to everyone.
And Michael, last word.
Yeah, go look at my Facebook. It's loaded with my opinions about gun legislation.
No pun intended. That's Michael Abajian, a retired Montpelier physician. Jeff Chamberlain is a hunter from Killington, and Seth Chase is a network engineer living in Colchester. Thanks very much to all three of you for being willing to share your thoughts and have this conversation with us today.
Sure,
I appreciate it.
Thank you,
Jane. It was a pleasure.
And listeners, we do want to continue to have this conversation. So if you have thoughts you want to share or directions you think this conversation should go in the future, send us a note. You can always reach us, Vermont Edition at vpr.net.